This is DW News live from Berlin. U.S. President Donald Trump lashes out at the impeachment hearings, calling them a disgrace and an embarrassment. Two members of the Trump administration have told the inquiry a phone call between Trump and the Ukrainian president was improper and unusual. Another two officials are now testifying. Also coming up, the grinding poverty of daily life in Chile's shanty towns. A stark illustration tonight of the inequality that's driving mass protests against the government of President Sebastian Piñera. And Luis Enrique is coming back as coach of Spain's national soccer team. He left the post earlier this year when his daughter became terminally ill. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. We begin in Washington on this third day of impeachment hearings against U.S. President Donald Trump. Two senior Trump officials have already testified today, including Jennifer Williams, an aide to Vice President Mike Pence, and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman of the National Security Council. Both listened to the phone call between Trump and Ukraine's President Zelensky back in July. Vindman today testified that the unequal bargaining position of the two presidents, in addition to Ukraine's dependence on the U.S., that all of that amounted to Trump making a demand on Zelensky and not Trump asking a favor.
It was improper for the president to request and to demand an investigation into a political opponent. Especially a foreign power where there's, at best, dubious belief that this would be a completely impartial investigation and that this would have significant implications if it became public knowledge and it would be perceived as a partisan play, it would undermine our Ukraine policy, and it would undermine our national security.
All right, let's take this story now to Washington. Our bureau chief, Alexandra Phanom, and she is on the story for us tonight. Good evening to you, Alexandra. So the first two witnesses who testified today, they belong to the Trump administration. I mean, we're talking about Trump's own people. What does their testimony mean for the president?
I would say it is another piece of evidence pointing in the direction that President Trump seemed not to be very focused on fighting against corruption in Ukraine, and that his decision to block the military aid to Ukraine was not a policy-focused, policy-based decision, but rather was meant to advance his political personal gains. And that is, of course, what the Democrats strongly believe in, and with Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, they had today a very credible witness, we have to say. President Trump, of course, he dismissed the testimonies today, calling the whole impeachment inquiry a scam, a witch hunt. The White House official Twitter account went after Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, questioning his professionalism. And here, just listen what President Trump had to say about this witness.
Vindman, I watched him for a little while this morning, and I think I'm going to let people make their own determination, but I don't know Vindman. I never heard of him. I don't know any of these people.
And we have to add, of course, that it's not the first time that President Trump attacked witnesses in those hearings that happened last week as well.
And Alexandra, this continues tomorrow. We're going to have a very big name testifying tomorrow, a man with big money. I'm talking about the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. He is obviously a Trump supporter, but what do we expect to hear from him tomorrow?
Well, he is definitely a key witness this week because, as you said, he's not a career diplomat. He was President Trump's mega donor, and he was sort of rewarded for supporting Donald Trump by being appointed U.S. ambassador to the European Union. And he is considered a key witness because he is one of few witnesses and maybe the only one that will be allowed to testify in the public who had direct contact with President Trump, who talked directly with the president about his Ukraine policy, and he can testify whether there was a quid pro quo. He can testify and tell us if he was told by President Trump to press the Ukrainian government to start an investigation into President Trump's political opponent, Joe Biden, and into his son, Hunter.
Yeah, tomorrow could become the most important day in these hearings so far. We will wait and see. Alexander Phenomen on the story for us in Washington. Alexander, as always, thank you. Well, now to South America. A month after demonstrators took to the streets in Chile, President Sebastián Piñera is struggling to restore calm. Thousands have again gathered in the capital, Santiago, demanding better education, better health care and pensions, and demanding Piñera's resignation. Millions find it difficult to make ends meet in Chile. Many are forced to live in makeshift camps and shanty towns.
This is my house. This is where a friend of mine sleeps. This is my room. Come on in. I'm not ashamed to show it to you. This is where I sleep. It's a bit messy because on the weekends I like to rest. I believe in the Virgin and in God. It's thanks to them that I'm here. When I first got to Santiago, I had to sleep out on the street.
David has lived in this camp in central Santiago for 15 years. He became homeless when his family rejected him after he came out as homosexual. Here, he found acceptance, albeit only within the camp limits.
Living here is hard. The neighbors judge us because they think we're bad people. They believe we steal and that we're up to no good. But that's not true. We're working people, humble working people.
David is one of tens of thousands of people living in the slums of Chile. According to a recent census, there are 802 camps in the country. Over 47,000 families in situations of extreme vulnerability. The Chilean NGO Techo calculates 50% of them are forced to live in these shanty towns because they can't afford rent.
There are a lot of people who move to these camps because of safety concerns. They believe a camp is safer than the districts they can afford to live in. Many of them are also immigrants, but that's a much smaller fraction.
Thousands of people driven to the fringes of society, forgotten by the system and treated as outcasts by their fellow citizens. To Vicente, the camps represent the very essence of what the protest movement claims is wrong with the country.
The camp is a symptom of what's happening. It's not necessarily the problem itself. It's a reflection of a society that discriminates, that doesn't take into account the poorest of the poor, and a society that doesn't care about others.
His NGO tries to involve the camp's inhabitants in what's happening in the country. In a meeting in front of David's shack, they share their thoughts and ideas about the recent upheaval. Protesters demand dignified living conditions for all Chileans, a reality that has long seemed out of reach for one of the founding members of this camp.
This is our toilet. It's a bit dirty. This is where we relieve ourselves. This is where we wash. We just got this thanks to our neighbors. They let us tap their water. We can wash here, we can shower here, we can cook here. But it's not dignified. This is my bedroom. My blanket, my stuffed animal, my bottle of water, and my candle, because I have no electricity here. My biggest wish is to get out of here, because I have children. I don't want them to see me in this situation. I don't want them to see me like this. It's not the future I want for them.
It's nothing outrageous he's asking for. Access to shelter and adequate social services are human rights. Juan and David go to work every day, hoping to save enough money to someday apply for subsidized housing. The fact that they might never get it is just one of the many reasons Chileans are still taking to the streets.
Well, here are some of the other stories that are making headlines around the world. Bolivian police and military used armored vehicles to dislodge supporters of former President Evo Morales from a gas plant near the city of La Paz. Officials say one protester was killed. The violence comes amid reports of food and fuel shortages caused by Morales' supporters blocking transport routes. Swedish prosecutors are dropping their investigation into rape charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. He's serving a prison sentence in Britain for jumping bail to avoid extradition to Sweden. Despite the decision today in Sweden, Assange still faces extradition to the United States, where he's wanted on charges of computer hacking and espionage. In Hong Kong, pro-democracy activists trying to avoid arrest have been involved in a cat-and-mouse chase with police at the Polytechnic University. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, says activists still on the campus must surrender to the police to end the three-day standoff. The United Nations has called on authorities to de-escalate the confrontation. Amnesty International says that more than 100 people have been killed in protests and a government crackdown in Iran. The unrest erupted after hikes in gas prices. Authorities responded by shutting down the internet over the weekend. Now, the supreme leader has described the protesters as thugs, and he says the protests are a security matter.
Very little information reaches the outside world from Iran. Authorities have shut down the internet. Whether there are still protests there and where they may be taking place is difficult to verify. Videos from Monday evening show angry demonstrators. Some are demanding that the government step down. The protests were sparked by a drastic increase in the price of gasoline. U.S. sanctions and mismanagement are the main causes of Iran's economic crisis.
I have three jobs to support myself. Of course, people are upset, and now they've found a reason to show their dissatisfaction. Everyone does it in their own way.
Pictures of men who have been arrested are shown on state television. They're accused of initiating the protests at the behest of other countries. One hardline newspaper reports they could face the death penalty. More than 1,000 people are believed to have been arrested in the wake of the protests. The UN has expressed concern over the security service's heavy-handed response.
Numbers killed are certainly in the dozens, in at least two figures, some reports even higher. So it would be very useful to have a better, clearer picture, but it's clearly very significant.
Meanwhile, the Iranian leadership is adhering to a hard line. Internet restrictions are still in effect in Iran.
All right, in football, Spain has announced that former coach Luis Enrique will lead the team at Euro 2020. Enrique stepped down from the role earlier this year due to illness in his family.
Luis Enrique is back in the Spain hot seat. The coach, seen here during his first spell in charge, returns to the national team set up 5 months after leaving his position to care for his terminally ill daughter. She then tragically passed away in August. Spanish Football Federation boss Luis Rubiales says he always intended for Enrique to return when he was ready.
Because of everything that happened with Luis Enrique, and because we believe he's an extraordinary coach, we have the moral obligation to give him time so that he can continue what he started.
Enrique's former assistant, Robert Moreno, led the team through the end of Euro 2020 qualification. But he has refused to return to his previous role, with reports suggesting he is unhappy at the way the federation has treated him.
Luis Enrique's decisions regarding his staff, as well as Robert's decision not to continue when he found out we were considering the return of Luis Enrique, are personal issues, and we won't get involved in that.
It's a turbulent end to the year for the Spanish national team. They have just two games left before next summer's European Championship.
You're watching DW News. Rob Watts is up next with